Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Merrick, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 15th day of August, on Anno Domini 2026. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. Hey. Have you always wanted 25% less RAM and always wanted to pay $100 more for it? Have I got a deal for you? On Wednesday, Google had their Made by Google 2026 event, where they introduced the new Pixel 11 line of phones, the new Pixel Buds 2, the Pixel Watch 5, and the new Pixel Tag. The event was hosted by Trevor Noah and pretended to be a talk show format chit-chat. The Pixel 11 phone line includes the Pixel 11 Pro, Pro XL, and the Pro Fold. They include 12 gigs of RAM, which is 25% less than last year's 16 gig, 256 gig or 512 gig of storage, the Tensor G6 chip, and supports 25-watt Qi 2.2 charging. They come with improved cameras. The Pro line has a 120x zoom and new colors, and something called the Highlight, which is a notification LED on the back of the phone for those times when the phone is face down and you can't hear it, you know, ring. Actually, that will be useful for the deaf and hard of hearing community, along with the rather amazing ability to translate American Sign Language into speech. Pretty much every model comes with better battery life, mainly due to clever programming rather than an actually bigger battery. Also, Google says it's okay they only come with 12 gigs of RAM since, again, clever programming will more than make up for that. We'll see. Google also introduced the most innovative product in the history of the universe, the Pixel Tag. It's a little Bluetooth tracker that you can put in your luggage or wallet or whatever and use the Find Hub to see where it is. What will they think of next? In what may come as no surprise to anyone, most of the event was taken up by Gemini. One new feature is called Rambler, not the car. It's a feature that cuts out the ums and uhs and other hesitations of normal speech when you're dictating a text. It can also cut repetition, add punctuation, and revise messages to make them squeaky clean or more professional before sending. The support page mentioned usage limits, but didn't yet specify what those are. Proactive Assistance, Google's new name for Magic Hue, uses, and here comes the buzzword, agentic AI to complete some tasks within Google Maps, find parking and other peripheral details before an event, quickly complete travel forms, and more. It could even automatically surface loyalty cards when you arrive at participating stores, if you're okay with sharing such minute location data. Can't imagine anything going wrong with that. It can also handle multi-step tasks across more than 40 apps on Pixel 11 phones, as well as improved live translate for podcast, YouTube videos, and other apps. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is somewhere, Made by Google 2026. And your choices are, gotta get it all. I'm enthused. Looks interesting. I'll wait and see. Not much I really need. And meh. So far, we've got 24 votes, and meh is half of them. And another quarter of them is I'll wait and see. So clearly, people are not that impressed.
Because they didn't really address one issue that I have been saying for years now. Need more battery life.
Yeah, and absolutely nobody says they got to get it all or I'm enthused.
Yeah.
I think what we're seeing here, and of course,
and getting less, you're paying more and getting less.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, if you want to vote in the poll, it's real easy. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. And then, of course, if you have something to say about that or dang near anything on the planet, give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415. Google's Apple's event is coming up soon.
Yeah, WWC in we had that in June. September, the phone.
The phone.
The second week in September.
Right. And that's, I suspect we're going to see much the same thing as here. You pay more to get a little less, and it all has to do with the RAM shortages because of AI.
Yeah.
And I suspect that in the poll it'll be much the same. People are not going to be, I mean, there are always going to be people in both the Apple and the Google camps who must have the latest and greatest and newest immediately, or else they will die.
And Apple has a new program called Upgrade, where you get the new one every year.
You're exactly right.
You just keep paying.
Right. But there are a lot of people who are going to look at it and essentially go, meh.
The rumors this year are interesting. So typically Apple releases the new iPhone, and then the Pro model and the Max model, and then maybe a cheaper model. Now the E is kind of the economy model. So the rumors for this September are it's going to be the Pro model and the Ultra model, which is the folding phone. And no cheaper model and no non-Pro model. That will come out in the spring, March or April. So the theory is they want to spread out their revenue. So there's not such a big spike in September, October, November, which is their fourth quarter. Their first quarter. Christmas is their first quarter.
Right.
It's weird. Companies do that. So that that sort of evens out their revenue over the year. And they don't have to make so many models at one time.
Right.
So because it's coming out in September, you know, less than a month from now, there's probably a million of them already built for that 10 million opening weekend.
Right.
And so you can't go back and change much now.
Right.
But if you're trying to make four different models of phones, that's a lot of production capacity.
Right.
If you're only making two different models, that helps.
Yep. And Google went the other way. They did the Pro, they did the Pixel 11, the Pro, Pro XL, the Fold. So they're bringing out models. And but you're right, you know, with Apple is going to run into the same problem. Less RAM for more money. There's no way around that right now. There's no magic.
It's just the way of life.
Yeah. Are the prices going to be higher? Are the RAM going to be lower?
Now,
or both?
Well, one thing that it's my favorite conspiracy theory of the week. The reason for this Apple upgrade thing is they will take the old phones, cannibalize them, take the RAM out of those,
yep,
put them in new phones.
They're also using a third party, Klarna, one of those buy now, pay later companies, because they used to have a program they financed themselves. And so now they're letting the other company take all the risk.
Right. And hopefully they will get a decent amount of reward out of that.
Yeah.
But the new products from Apple, from Google, the hardware, whether you want it or not, is your business. And of course, the amazing Google Tag, which is such an incredibly innovative product.
I have a feeling Apple's not going to like that.
Yeah,
the AirTag. Although AirTag is one word.
Yeah.
Pixel Tag is two words.
Right.
So that might be
saving grace. And you
can't
copyright or trademark the word tag.
Yeah.
So
I'm sure they'll try.
I'm sure they've tried. I'm sure that's why it's AirTag, one word.
Yeah.
So Google couldn't call it an AirTag, but they can certainly call it a tag.
Mm-hmm.
I have a tag on the back of my shirt. Mm-hmm. Apple cannot come after me for that.
Right.
So, yeah, and I get that. But, the hardware side, which this is a bad time for hardware because of costs, in the software realm, the thing that most amazed me was the ability to use ASL, American Sign Language, to sign to another person over messaging. And they see text. And when they speak back to you, you see text.
That's got to be one heck of a processor, because, I mean, some folks can get signing go pretty damn fast, especially if they're, you know, husband and wife team.
Yeah.
I've seen some families sit there and they, I mean, I can't keep up with it. I know some.
It's kind of the same with any, with a spoken language. If it's not your native language, the other people can to just go too fast.
They can just go way too fast.
Yeah.
What?
But that being able to translate sign language into text and then back again is just amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
I saw.
It doesn't translate it back. They see text on the screen.
Okay. Because I did see a prototype on
I'm sure that's next.
Yeah. I saw a prototype on some science show years ago where they had a robotic hand doing the finger spelling for sign language. So someone who's blind and apparently deaf too can hold the hand and feel the fingers.
Right. Mm-hmm. The way Helen Keller did, they spelled the words on her palm.
Or on some of them, what we used to see was on their keyboard, below that was a Braille reader.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And they could interpret, and they could run their hands across the Braille reader, you know, which wasn't super long, but they could feel the letters and spell it in their head.
Yep.
And then they also had, you know, shortcuts and everything else with the Braille readers at the bottom of their keyboard.
The first class I ever had for sign language, you know, it was really simple. They went really slow. It was really great. And then the final exam, we were all, you know, this was the 70s, so we were all sitting on the floor. The teacher leaned back on the floor on his elbows and was signing like this.
Oh, no.
Oh,
well, you son of a pup, you.
My sister used to do it for the court systems when they lived up here for Irondequoit.
Yep.
She was called in a number of times and was very good at it. Matter of fact, even when she worked at the school, the middle grade school, she had a few students. They were surprised because they were signing, and all of a sudden she started, and she caught part of their conversation. She interrupted them, and they go, oh, they didn't realize. Because they thought they had a thing going. You know?
When I was teaching at RIT, nothing but the highest respect for the interpreters. They were... to the person, utterly and completely amazing. If anybody from RIT is listening, they all deserve a raise. They were amazing. I also have a couple of friends who are interpreters, one out in California, and they're just...
Well, NTID is one of the well-known schools across the country here in Rochester, New York, and a lot of folks don't realize it. It sits right up there on St. Paul.
RIT and they're at RIT, so they're on campus.
But I mean, for the other younger kids.
Oh, right. That's right. And also, you know, in terms of higher education, there's
RIT,
NTID, the National Technical Institute for the Deaf at RIT, and there's Gallaudet down in Washington D.C. And those are two of the biggest deaf populations. In the country. Biggest,
well known in the whole U.S.
Yep.
There's a couple of comedians that have done bits where they notice the signing interpreter in front of the stage and then try to think of the filthiest swear words to see how that gets signed.
Years ago, my friend Brian, God bless him, took me to see, for my birthday, took me to see Red Skelton at the Eastman. He was utterly amazing. Oh. And right in the middle of it, he goes over next to the interpreter where there's a table and picks up a glass of water and says, you know, this is really thirsty work. He takes a drink and he looks at the interpreter and says, would you like to wash your hands?
There's the comedian Brad Williams, who's a little person, and he had a bit and he wanted to see what the sign was for little person or dwarf. And it's they hold their hand up and then bring their hand down. And he goes, what the F? And so the interpreter's saying, sign language, you have to be quick and obvious.
Yeah.
And, oh, okay, I suppose.
The really interesting thing was, depending on what class you were teaching, the instructor might come to you, the interpreter might come to you ahead of time and say, look, are you going to use any words, any technical terms that I don't know? So, I would always have those prepared ahead of time. A lot of them didn't ask because most of the classes I taught were basic level stuff, but I could hand them that, and then they would say, give me a minute, and at the beginning of the class, they would talk to all the deaf people and say, okay, this word, which they would spell, is going to be this sign. And this word will be this sign.
Yep.
So that they didn't slow down.
Well, they do that.
Because I'm a fast talker.
They do that at Jiva. Jiva, if you go to Jiva, over on the right-hand side, they
do that everywhere.
Two people interpreting all that. I love watching that. I mean, it's just an art.
Yeah, I can't keep up anymore. I can't. Oh. I can watch them, but I lose every other word.
Well, they've got so many other shortcuts for meanings and that type of stuff that they, you know, versus American Sign Language standards versus hyphenated sayings.
Right, right, right.
And once they, you know, like couples, you know, they'll come up with other meanings, you know, instead of spelling it all out or this or that, they could just use other gestures and the other person knows what they are.
Right.
You know, which makes me kind of reflect, going back a little bit. You know, we're sitting here now talking about sign language. I mean, you think about it. Just in the past few years, how far we've come to now where we can open up our phone, sit there, hit the little microphone, talk into it to look for something or ask a question, and it spits back the damn answer.
Yep.
And it's like, who would have thought, say, even 10 years ago, if you had said that, just like when we said Buck Rogers, you know, and going to the moon and that, it's like, yeah, right.
Right. That what was science smoking? Fiction. You know, Majel Barrett, the voice of the computer on Star Trek, could do that. But in real life, there was nothing like it. In Battlestar Galactica, Adama would dictate his log. Mm-hmm. And it put in the commas and everything. Well, now the new version of Gemini will do that. Put in the commas and take out the ums and do all of that stuff.
And versus the old days when we had to sit there. Remember when we started up a program, you had to teach it. Yep. Your enunciation. And if you had a cold, that could change how you pronounced words or anything else. I mean, we have just come...
Kids that grew up watching that science fiction invented that stuff.
That's exactly right. That's why it's flip phones.
Flip phones, yeah.
We're communicators. I cannot remember who it was. And if the person who did it wants to call in and remind us, that would be great. But many, many decades ago, there was somebody did a demo for Apple Cider and we were at the school and they brought in one of those drag and dictate type things. And it turned out, you know, he set it all up early. Trained it to the room computer
because there's echoing in that room. It's different acoustics.
Computer, yes, master. Turn on the lamp. Turn on the lamp. Yes. Poof, the lamp would go on, and then a couple other things. It was all set. We practiced all afternoon. It was great. Then the auditorium filled up with people, and all the acoustics changed, and nothing worked. I felt so bad for him. I felt so bad.
Yeah. That's why we always say when you're on a video conference, like a Zoom meeting, having a headset with a microphone right in front of your mouth is the best way to go, because then it can hear you and it doesn't get a lot. And you try to use the ambient mic in your computer, and a lot of times it will ramp up the gain to try to catch your voice and then hear every little thing happening in the background.
Well, I have that problem on Sunday nights. Some of the people who use their ambient mics, I have trouble hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is the fact that I'm deaf, but part of it is the fact that using your ambient mic is never as good as using a headset. Even the little mics on the thing are not as good.
Yeah, no, they
as rubbing, a regular mic. Yeah,
rubbing cloth or rubbing beard.
Rubbing beard, rubbing cloth, rubbing your neck. Yep. Yeah. But so, you know, one thing, if you're going to be in any sort of video conference, whether it's Zoom or Meet or FaceTime or whatever, good lighting, headset goes a long way toward making it a much better experience for everybody else
enjoyable.
On the call. That's just
common sense. It's just like here, you know, I mean, I play that one bit about speakerphones.
Yep.
And people don't realize, you know, it might sound okay at your end, but at our end, we're hearing you talk. and then in the background, us talking. So that's why we tell folks, you know, and we'll usually shut anybody down, you know, say, hey, you're using a speakerphone, please turn it off. Yep. Oh, okay.
And sometimes you hear someone in the other room at the other end.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the person who's on the call with you didn't hear that.
Right.
Because the software is trying to catch you talking, so it ramps up the gain and hears every little thing behind.
How about the guy that had all the birds? We were sitting there trying to, he was trying
birds,
to
ask. Birds, dogs.
He had a couple birds squawking in the background.
Fans and air conditioning are rough because you don't want to turn off the air conditioning in your seat.
Whereas if you've got a microphone, none of that is a problem.
Right.
Because it's usually one directional.
Right.
Right at your face. Right. You know, like these microphones that we're using now, they work off center because the way the microphone is built.
They're not omnidirectional, but they're
semi-directional.
Yeah. What?
Something like that. Cardioid?
Cardioid.
Cardioid.
Cardioid mics.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Gemini is Google's big thing now. Everything they do is agentic. The G6 chip is designed to do more AI stuff even than the G5, or excuse me, the G, what number are we up to? Six, right?
Five?
What the?
I think five is the released version.
Five is for Google.
Yeah, I think it's the five.
Yeah, because they just came out with the new tablet, the phone, the earbuds.
Yeah, I just couldn't remember what the number was.
Or the Pixel 5, rather.
The Pixel 11.
Yeah.
Pixel 11.
But it's a Gemini. It's a Tensor G5, right? Six. No, it is the Tensor G6 chip. So I must have the G5 in my phone. I don't know. I can't keep track. Everything is multiple names.
What about the G7?
Something Lake and whatever. What?
Like that commercial that used to run where a guy's driving home in a convertible and he's got the boxes full of the new, you know, T5 computer, all the rage. And he sees a billboard where they're ripping off the T5 sign and putting up the T6 sign.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that's this. There are people who are just going to buy it because it's the latest and greatest. And there are people who are going to get the new phones just because they're there. And Apple and Google love that. It's a guaranteed income for them. Their investors absolutely love that.
The one thing, you know, I love my Pixel phone, but when I was looking at like the different watch, I don't like that round face. I'd rather have, you know, a square one like the Apple phone.
Which is funny because watches have been round for, 1,000 years?
I like the round watch. I like it. I do.
See, I'd rather have a square one. I mean, that's just personal. But, you know, to offer both flavors.
Yeah, yeah.
Looks almost like a screen on your hand, on your arm.
Right. Yeah, I suspect the round one is probably cheaper to manufacture.
Well, yeah, I think I saw that when I saw the, you know, it come out that, like, the watch of the five, it's going for around $400, which is okay, but I don't usually wear too much.
I was way off. Wristwatches have only been around 100 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. I would love to see a pocket watch case for this.
Mm-hmm.
That would be so
cool. Pocket watch would be cool.
Yeah. I used to have nothing but a pocket watch back in the day. I much prefer to a watch on my wrist. I just wear this because, particularly when I'm driving and, you know, if I'm going to go out and pay for stuff, all of that. So,
I used to have one clipped and it used to clip onto my, belt loop.
Right.
On my pants and sit in the pocket. And,
here's one of the retractable. So you pull it out and then let go and it zips back into your pocket.
Nice. Like the key things.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The problem with all of that, of course, is that these things lock when they're off your wrist. So you'd have to unlock it every time you took it out of your pocket, which would be a pain in the neck. But yeah, we'll see what the new stuff is. And we'll see how many people are willing to spend more to essentially get less. The new chip is a little bit faster, but you're getting less RAM and you know, not much in the way of additional camera or any of that stuff. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Rich from Arundhatuit, New York, on the line. What's up, Rich?
Hello, guys. Happy Saturday.
You too.
I want to throw something in about the watches. Isn't your phone considered a pocket watch? You put it in your pocket after you look at it.
Well, that's true. You're absolutely right about that.
So I have a pocket watch.
That's true.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
All right. Quick question. Any suggestions on video editing under the Linux operating system?
Sure. There are a couple of different programs that are available. Kden Live is one.
Okay.
Give me a second. Can't think of the name of it, so I'm looking
it
up. There's
one here called OpenShot.
OpenShot, Kden Live will do it. So those are, you know, those are a couple of the ones that'll do it. It's you can look through your repository. Generally speaking, and just look for, you know, you have the software store, which depending on which distribution you have is either called software, or software manager, or something along that line.
It's under the Mint.
Linux Mint, I think, calls it the software manager. And if you open that up, you can search for video editing, and there are several actually quite good ones. And quite useful ones.
Well, just YouTube
just
it, too.
Editing some old VHS tapes, actually, trying to convert them onto a disc and then do a little bit of editing, some of the in-between stuff that, you know, we're not interested in, like news articles and stuff.
Well, the other thing you can do, too, is just go to YouTube and Google, you know, video editing under whatever flavor of Linux you're using.
I put a link up on
and you'll be surprised, wire. All of them that come down, it's...
Yeah, there's Shotcut, Kden Live.
The bigger issue is going to be how you get the VHFs into the computer.
Yeah.
To have analog video into digital.
I've got a VHS DVD recorder that I'm transferring the tapes onto the disk.
Oh, there you go. And then you can move them from the disk.
Yep.
Then I use the disk to do the editing or edit it off of there.
Yep. Yeah, there's a few little adapter boxes that will take analog video on one side and USB on the other side.
Yes. Yeah, I've had this one machine for a long time for DVDs and being able to record onto them and, you know, could do it off a TV or the VHS or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah, but there are a number of them. Like I said, there's Live. No, Live Tuner doesn't do that. There's Shotcut and Kden Live and Vidiot and
so many out there.
So all you need to do, and they're all free. Those are all free.
Right. That's what I'm looking for. Just like I said, I don't need anything professional. I just need something to chop out some stuff.
Right. So yeah, I would look at either Kden Live or Shotcut to start with.
Okay. All right, I will take a look in the software manager.
Or Project
Thanks a lot.
X.
I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. You too. Or Project X. I keep forgetting about that one. Again, whether or not you have all of these available to you depends entirely on your version of Linux, right? Some will have more.
Yeah.
But the easiest way to find anything that you're looking for is to open up your software manager and search for example, video editor. And you'll probably find too many choices. But again, because they're free, try them.
Yeah.
Download it. You can always uninstall it.
Yeah.
Go on to the next one. It takes a little bit more of your time, but you end up with something that's great.
Oh, that's one other thing. When I got the Zorin Pro, you know, it comes standard. I think it's with like four different screen layouts.
Right.
They add about another six.
Right.
And it's like, holy, and all this other software that's also included in it. And the main reason I got it was, and this is one thing that we have said for decades here at this radio station, is that if you're going to use the software, support the company.
Yep.
Just like we do with Super Anti-Spyware, Malware Bytes, Revo Uninstaller, all those programs. Use those, you know, if you're going to use those folks, and keep it for a while. I mean, if you're just going to try it once and then, I'm not interested. Okay. But if you're going to continually use that particular software, then throw them a few bucks.
And it's only $48.
Yeah.
That's less than a third of what you pay for Windows when you buy a new computer anyway. Because believe me, you're paying Microsoft when Windows comes on your computer.
That's like I told you when we came into the studio, I says, the big announcement for me is I've got one Windows computer left in my house. I finally cut the cord, just like cutting the cord with cable TV and everything else, wound up getting rid of Windows on the two machines downstairs. Even my wife was surprised at how much it looked like Windows because I downloaded one of the icon screens, again, free.
Right.
Made it look just like our Windows machine, and it's running so much faster.
Yep.
And you thought I was bad on tab. She's even worse. Of course, she's doing a lot of research. She does a lot of stuff with Ancestry.
Right.
And Graves and that, and tries to post information for folks. She has gotten, over the years, so many nice compliments because people were, say, looking for certain people. And she's gone out to Holy Sepulchre Cemetery or some others, taken the photos and posted them up there because they're maybe across the other, you know, in California or wherever, and all of a sudden now they've got pictures of their loved one's headstone and that to add to their ancestry. Because right. That is so big right now.
That is huge. That is huge. All right. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. And while you do that, I'll read the news. Microsoft's August 2026 patch Tuesday comes with security updates for a massive 400 flaws, including one actively exploited and two publicly disclosed zero-day vulnerabilities.
And we thought last month's 200 was bad.
No, last month was 500. So this 570 last month, but this is the third biggest, I think, ever. 42 of them are critical, 37 are remote code executions. While this patch Tuesday was not as large as last month's, which fixed 570 flaws, it is still very large compared to the average. Microsoft warned that there would be an increase in Patch Tuesday security updates as it has begun to use an AI-powered vulnerability discovery system to identify more security flaws across its software products. It's huge, so carve out some time for both the download and the installation, depending on how fast your computer is. For you Windows 10 Luddites, Microsoft has released extended security updates for version 22H2 and 21H2 to fix security vulnerabilities and bugs. The update is mandatory as it contains the August 2026 Patch Tuesday security updates. As usual, the day after Patch Tuesday, a researcher released the new Microsoft Defender zero-day exploit named Shieldbreak, which will remain unpatched for at least a month. Shield Break can be used to gain system privileges on fully patched Windows 10, Windows 11, and Windows Server systems. The August update does include a patch for Legacy Hive, a vulnerability that was disclosed one day after July's patch Tuesday. So you were only vulnerable for that one for a month. There's a high severity Microsoft SharePoint remote code execution vulnerability, which has been flagged as actively exploited since early July. Microsoft has yet to confirm that the security flaw is being exploited in the wild, but if you administer a SharePoint server, be aware. 2 years ago, Microsoft described AI as a, quote, generational shift, end quote, in technology that it wanted to lead. Now the company is merging its Copilot-branded consumer and business apps and ditching a number of unsuccessful AI features. Microsoft will combine the functionality of its consumer-facing Copilot app and more business-oriented Microsoft 365 Copilot app. The move is both an acknowledgement that the personal and professional uses of AI often overlap, and that Microsoft's prior strategy was too complicated to make Copilot a viable competitor to the likes of ChatGPT, Claude, and Gemini. According to Microsoft, consumers will lose access to group chats, AI-generated podcasts, and Copilot, Copilot Labs experimental features, and deep research by August 18, 2026, which is not likely to be a hardship for many people since not a lot of people use those features. Our best feature, of course, is answering your questions. So give us a call at 585-965-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 800-790-0415.
Didn't a couple of months ago they just rebrand everything with Copilot?
Everything
Word
is
with
Copilot,
Copilot
now,
Excel
yes.
with Copilot?
Yes.
And now they're backing off?
Well, they're combining.
Ah.
It's still Copilot, but it's now not Copilot with this and Copilot with that. Now it's just Copilot. So, and I believe there's still Google Miko, M-I-C-O, Microsoft Copilot, Miko, that they're pushing with the little, not Clippy, cloud figure. And they're still pushing that. Well, that's, you know, it's all of a piece. Apple is using, Apple Intelligence or Siri, or actually underneath Gemini. Google's using Gemini. Microsoft's using, Copilot. They're all using, if you're on a Samsung, I think you can still get whatever it was. It started with a B.
Bixby.
So yeah, I mean, you can still, you know, everybody's all about AI now. AI is the new buzzword. It's the new hotness. And God forbid you have some sort of product without AI in it. I am on Bluehost is the place where I host all this stuff. And they're apparently not content with bleeding me for unlimited storage. They're also pushing every couple of days I get a notification. You know, for X amount of money, you could be adding agentic AI to all your products. Thank you. I appreciate that. You have no idea how much. Trust me, you have no idea how much. Wait, I can give you an idea. Zero. That's how much. But yeah, so.
You'll be shocked at the amount I care.
I could not conceivably care less. It would not be possible.
So if you had negative caring, does that wrap around and become positive again?
I guess it depends on whether you believe in a toroidal universe or not.
Or do two negatives make a positive?
Yeah. Right. We all use AI a little bit every day, right? I mean, how many times do you say to one of your smart speakers, set an alarm or set a timer? It used to be that was built into the device itself, frankly. Now it's all AI. Now it just all goes out to AI. Every time you do that, you use a couple of gallons of water. So we all use AI every day. And when you do a search, for example, on your favorite streaming service, that's using AI. Everything is AI now.
It used to just be called the algorithm.
It used to be the algorithm. Now it's AI, and I get that. We use it all the time. And
different names, same
thing. If you
watch
Silo, that's the algorithm.
Right. And it used to all happen on your phone, and now much of it just goes out to the web and to the internet and does it there. Microsoft is killing Google Assistant, which happened on your phone, in favor of more Gemini, which happens in the cloud, which means rather than it all being private. So, for example, if I said, set an alarm, Google didn't really know I was doing that. It happened on my phone and never went anywhere else. Now, of course, it goes out to the internet. It goes out to Google servers, and they know I've set an alarm.
Because you may want to set the same alarm again.
Mm-hmm. I may want to set the same alarm.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah.
They know better.
So, you know, if you, for example, if I use my watch and say I want to set an alarm for 30 minutes, I can just do that. Nobody else knows I've done it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I say, you know.
Now, does that go off in your hearing aids?
No, not on the watch.
Oh, that goes you can't off, have that, it. That, you don't have it synced to your hearing aid?
No. My phone is synced to my hearing aids.
Can you?
But not my. No, not this one.
Oh. Next version.
Maybe. Probably. We'll see what the watch for. I'm not getting one, but we'll see. But this is just buzzes and shakes on my wrist, which is fine. I can feel that. But yeah, so we're seeing more and more stuff being done by AI, and there really are two reasons for that. One is because it means that, honestly, the companies, and whether it's Google or Apple or Microsoft or Samsung or whoever, have to do less because they can just foist it off on AI. And they can track what you do via AI. And that's the reason that they do all of these things. And I think we need to acknowledge that. Those are things that are going to continue to happen. You know, we talk about how, you know, are things listening all the time? Well, yes, in that they're waiting for the trigger phrase, but theoretically they're not listening to what we actually say. But when we send a request off to AI, that gets remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sort of thing that's bad for your privacy. And you can go in and turn some of that stuff off and forget the history. But I don't honestly know that it actually forgets the history completely or only.
Probably not. It's buried somewhere.
Yeah. And it doesn't stop them from starting the history back up again and doing more. That's the whole idea behind Microsoft Recall, right? The thing that took a snapshot of your screen every 7 seconds, including all your passwords and everything else, and sent them all to Microsoft. That's probably not something I would want to do. I don't worry about that because I don't use Microsoft. But you know, if you're a Microsoft user, you might want to think twice when Recall shows back up on your computer. They put it on once. There was a massive lashing out by the community, so they stopped. But that doesn't mean it went away. It just means they'll try again.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be aware of that. It's a constant battle between the privacy you want and the data the shareholders want. So you need to be proactive all the time.
You never know what's going to go where.
Right. And that's true of Apple, and it's true of Microsoft, and it's true of Samsung and whoever your phone is and whoever your computer is, unless you're using Linux. And even on Linux, if you use AI, they track your stuff, unless you're using DuckDuckGo or Brave as your AI. Brave's is called, I think, Leo, and DuckDuckGo's is called Duck AI.
Duck AI.
Just like squirrel.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would be. You have to be diligent. You have to constantly look back at what's being saved on your computer. You have to constantly, and that's, you know, buried deep in the settings under privacy. You have to go through all of those things regularly and see what's being saved and say, no, 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 because often they get turned on again. Even if you set no one time, they get turned on again.
Patches. Oh, you must have been mistaken.
Well, the updates, like we've said before, Windows thinks that they know better what's for going on with you. You do not own that. They will suggest that, oh, we're going to put this in it. Oh, too bad if you don't like it.
Right. Or we're going to take this away.
Yeah.
Too bad if you don't like
mm-hmm.
it.
Go find another OS if you don't like it.
Right. And many people are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've got an alternative to both Apple and Microsoft, which is Linux. And I know change is scary and change is hard and nobody likes change, nobody, unless it clinks. So I think, you know, that's why we're constantly saying grab an old machine and play.
Well, the thing, like for me, this past week, on Monday, I got the new little box. I went to the Zorin website, downloaded it. The file's sitting on my desktop.
The little box was a mini PC.
Yeah. All I had to do was open up a program called Rufus.
Yep.
Or you could use Blen Etcher.
Right.
Blen Etcher.
Blen Etcher.
Yep. Open it up, and it says, okay, what flash drive are you going to use? Oh, yeah, there it is. What file do you want to use? This one that's sitting on my desktop. Burn it to the flash drive. Took maybe about 5-10 minutes, took it out of there, plugged it into this new computer, said boot it up and boot it from the flash drive. About 30 minutes later, after answering a few questions, I'm US keyboard and network and the password.
And here's my name and here's my password.
Yeah. 30 minutes later, I've got a boot up system that looks just like Windows.
By the way, that 30 minutes included installing the entire operating system, rebooting, updating, and rebooting again.
Yep, and there it was. 30 minutes later, I sat there with a full screen.
That pondering, looked like Windows.
Pondering, okay, what software do I want? Went into their software, typed in NPass, because that's the first thing I want to set up, and my network, boom. Had that all done. By the middle of the afternoon on Monday, I'm thinking, okay, other trouble could I
set aside all week to do this?
Yeah. And if it was Windows, you would have had to. Yeah.
I thought I was going to spend most of the day and on into the evening. What I spent time doing was watching other videos on other cool stuff that I could do with it.
That's the problem with Linux. That's the problem. There's a billion incredibly great and incredibly free programs.
Yeah.
It is a time sink. You can spend a lot of time playing under Linux.
You could go from now until the end of the year and on into the following spring.
Because they're always making new software.
Other stuff that you want to do in that, find a YouTube video. They'll walk you through it.
If you, as we said to Rich, if you're looking for a piece of software, the first place you should look is your software manager.
Yep.
Because there are going to be tens of thousands of programs that are available to you for free that do all kinds of things. I've got, I do 3D printing. I've got 4 slicers that I can download for free out of my repository, plus a bunch of other free ones from other companies that I can download from their websites. Finding the perfect one is, perfect is the enemy of good. So I tend to grab one and just use it until it doesn't do something I really want. Then I go get something else. You can play forever and it's all free. And how do you beat that? I don't know. Listen, that music tells us the first hour of our show is done, but do not despair. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right, a whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. Take a bio break, grab yourself something to snack on or drink, and we will see you in just a couple of minutes, so don't go too far.
computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Following the latest twist in Google's legal battles with Epic, U.S. Android users are now able to open Google's Play Store and download a third-party digital store with its own selection of apps. Sort of. Aptoide, a store specializing in mobile games, is the first to become available. Aptoide itself is relatively little known, but it's likely to be the first of many alternative app stores. It's presumably only a matter of time before the Epic Store makes its own appearance, and the likes of Amazon, Samsung, and other phone manufacturers may also want to put their stores in front of potential customers. It also opens the door to Microsoft's long gestating Xbox Mobile Store. You're not alone if you just received an Apple threat notification saying it's directed at a mercenary spyware attack targeted at your iPhone. Apple sent a new batch of threat notifications on August 13th to targeted users in 110 countries. Apple's been sending these threat notifications multiple times a year since 2021 when it detected highly targeted mercenary spyware attacks. So they're real. At least this one is. Chrome's Google browser has added a new feature that go a long way in preventing a form of account takeover that's grown increasingly common as users adopt two-factor authentication, passkeys, and similar protections. The new Chrome protection is known as device-bound session credentials, or DBSCs. The measure stores a unique encryption key in a silicon resident fortress that's built into the device running the browser. This is designed to protect against the theft of session cookies, which would be a very good thing. Hackers are actively exploiting a macOS authentication bypass vulnerability. What? A vulnerability in Apple's computers? After public exploit code emerged, the security issue lies in macOS screen sharing, a built-in remote desktop feature that allows remote desktop control over a network. The flaw allows network-based attackers to gain access without valid credentials. An attacker could use this access to open applications remotely, access files, change security settings, and perform various other actions. macOS users are recommended to upgrade their system because the newest versions are not vulnerable to this attack. A new Android NFC relay malware called Wind Relay is being used alongside the SpyNote remote administration tool to steal card data and send it to attackers in real time. A fraudster impersonated a bank employee and called the victim under the pretense of a problem with their payment card. During the call, the threat actor instructed the victims to sideload the SpyNote tool disguised as a legitimate app and granted it accessibility service permissions, giving the attacker remote access to the Android device. To add credibility, the attacker can personalize the malicious app label with the victim's name. Windows Recall is the feature that takes a snap, we just talked about this, that takes a snapshot of your screen and makes it searchable. This is a horrible security issue, and Microsoft has backed off for now. But don't despair, Apple users. You too can have Recall. ChatGPT just added that feature to its macOS app. If you use the ChatGPT app, you might just want to make sure that ChatGPT computer history is turned off. But don't turn us off. Instead, give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. And while you do that, we will talk to Matt from Buffalo, New York. What's up, Matt?
Hey, what's up? I'm glad to hear your guys' voices, and I'm lucky to be alive today.
Yeah. What's up?
I just want to say I got this new phone, right? They put so much bloatware on this phone. I wasn't doing anything, And it's like, this thing needs an update, that thing needs an update, that thing needs an update. Just be aware of what you buy. I got one of these Fire TVs that I thought was good. The thing's just the ad seller.
Yep.
I mean, cheap TV, nice. But I guess you get what you pay for.
Yep, it's exactly right. One of the things that people are angry with Amazon about is that Kindles show ads everywhere. Fire TVs show ads everywhere. And let's be honest, that's pretty much the way they make their money.
Sometimes I pause the show because I want to read something on the screen, and an ad pops up and covers the screen.
Yeah, it covers the screen. And so, that's how they do it. And in terms of the phones, one reason that you save money on the phone is because the phone company is being paid to put somebody else's software on that phone. That's one of the reasons that I prefer the Pixel line, because those are an almost entirely pure Android experience.
I would say it was a Virgin phone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There you win. I get it. All right. Yeah. And so one of the first things you have to do when you get any phone is remove the bloatware, assuming you can. Some of it you cannot. So, be aware of that, too.
That's one of the advantages of buying a Google Pixel phone, is it's pure Google and none of the extra stuff.
Right.
None of the extra junk.
You do get the Google stuff,
yeah,
like messages and Drive, but you probably want those anyway, and if you don't, you can remove them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that can be the problem with the other phones. You get a Samsung phone, it's got the Samsung messaging app.
Which looks almost identical, by the way, the icon.
To the Google messaging app.
Yep.
And if you're using Verizon Cellular, you get the Verizon messaging app.
Right. And so you have to be aware of which ones you have and which ones you want and which ones you don't want.
And which one will convert to your new phone when you get it.
Right. And that's the Google messages, not any of the others. It's a tough thing to know just quite what you're getting and what you're using. My wife had that problem back in the day. She went to a new phone and suddenly didn't have any of her old messages. Luckily, we still had her old phone, so I was able to download them all and save them for her. But they weren't in her new phone. It was now a text file that she had to. Well, search through for
that's
stuff.
The whole beauty of the Google. I mean, if your computer crashes, no biggie.
Right.
All you do is get a new one, sign into your Google account, your messages and your photos and everything else, documents and everything else is up there on the cloud.
One of the other things that I really like is when I am sitting at my computer, I don't necessarily want to reach for my phone constantly, so I open messages for web on my computer screen, and if a message comes, somebody wants to text me, it's right there, and I can actually type the response at my keyboard and all of that. So
we wish Apple would do that too. We thought we were getting close when they had iCloud messages,
right?
But that's only to sync messages to your devices. It doesn't show you on the web on iCloud,
right? I've never done that here. Yeah.
Are Apple phones able to do talk calls with Android these days?
Yes. Yes and no. Depends on which. Okay.
Cellular talk. Yeah, they always have been. The cell companies. Actually, no. In the very, 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 very beginning, if your friend
like
had
FaceTime
a different cell
or
company,
FaceTime, I think it's called.
Yeah, if you're talking about messaging, you can talk to Apple people. I do it all the time. They right now are still seeing,
like, people with the Android told me, oh, they don't have a green dot. They show up as an Android user.
Right.
They're not special.
Yeah, right. That's going away.
Yeah, the RCS has come out, and now Android users on an iPhone are still green dots, but you get the full encryption, you get all the emoji things that didn't used to all work with standard SMS. And in FaceTime, you can use a website to have an Android user join a FaceTime call.
Right. And that's changing, too. They're talking about...
And most people just use a different messaging, video messaging app.
Which is why they're talking about fixing it.
And open source.
Right, right. A lot of people are using one of the open source ones like Telegram or...
Need people to patch it up and fix everything.
Yeah, well, the problem is they want to lock you into their ecosystem, right?
Sure, of course.
Yeah. Right. The problem is nobody lives in a single ecosystem anymore. If I want to talk to Steve, either we each have to have two separate phones or they better work together. And that's just the reality of the universe, and the companies are slowly coming around to realize that. All right. Thanks, Matt. Yep. Good luck with your new phone.
You guys have a great weekend. Nice talking with you. Bye.
Nice talking with you, too. Thanks. Yeah. It used to be, and still I guess it is, if I message Steve, he sees it in a different font or a different color or something.
Yeah, some of the text characteristics are not quite the same. Right. Sometimes the emojis are different. There was a big problem a few years ago when Apple changed the pistol icon
to a water gun.
And so let's go to the park and shoot water pistols. And everyone on Android saw, 1911, right. 9mm.
there's a whole movement now to get these things more in line with each other. And that's mostly going to be RCS texting, rich communication system. There are two ways that you can send messages to people over the messaging app. One is as plain text with a few emojis, and that's where the problems come in. And the other is RCS, rich communication system, which is universal and will at the, I think the next update for Apple, I think will be the one where they now become identical in terms of the way they work.
Because it started with the 26.5 update.
Okay. So Google has been following the standard. Apple, of course, has not.
Well, Apple says Google had their own version that they submitted as a standard, and Apple waited till the standard was ratified.
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
Yeah.
The fact that everybody else went to it first.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the... that's the thing. So if you are looking to communicate with other people by text, you should be able to do that shortly with no problem. If you are looking, and RCS, by the way, is encrypted, whereas plain text messages, SMS, is not.
Which is why a lot of the companies are now changing that for two-factor codes. They want you to use an authenticator app that is encrypted because text messaging is not encrypted.
Right. And text messaging from places like Text Magic and all of those places are cheap, but also not RCS, at least at this point. So you're getting plain text. So if I do two-factor authentication and send you, if I send Steve a code, anybody can intercept that and then log in as him before he gets it.
Yeah, it's not likely anyone will unless you're a high-value target.
Right. But it is possible. Yeah. And so,
it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. You don't have to be like the president of a country. You can have a disgruntled spouse.
Right.
And they can intercept your text messages and cause havoc.
Right. I've talked about this before. There used to be a program called VOMIT, Voice Over Misconfigured Internet Telephones. And you could set it up because most of those calls are over Wi-Fi. So you could go to a public Wi-Fi place. Like, for example, I was teaching a class in this, by the way, which is the only reason I did it, is I went to the one of the lounges at RIT and set it up on my laptop and just let it run for about an hour while I did some other stuff, and then went and listened to it. And thank heaven I listened to it before I showed it to my class, because there wasn't one single conversation that I felt comfortable playing in front of a mixed group of students. my golly, I forgot what it was like to be a college student. But you could, what it did was it grabbed all of the packets and reassembled them as plain language and turned them into a sound file and saved it as an MP3 on my desktop, on my computer. So yeah, it was quite a little eye opener. And I thought, okay, I can talk about what vomit does and why you should be more careful about what you say, but I can't play any examples.
Even back in the when radio scanners were popular and cell phones weren't encrypted, we'd catch someone saying, you know, calling their wife saying, "Oh, I'm working late. I'll be home late," and then they hang up and call their mistress, and I'm on my way over, and because people didn't realize the phones weren't encrypted.
Back in the day, this was in when I was in Detroit. I was driving along. I had my CB radio on, and I caught somebody saying, I turned to a channel, and there was a guy saying, "Yeah, my wife just left for the afternoon. Come on over." And a woman answered, "Okay, I'll be right there." Okay, I don't need to listen to this.
Maybe it was the cleaner.
I'm sure it was the maid. I'm sure that's who it was. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's exactly who it was.
And I got a bridge for you.
Exactly. What we're finding over time is that there is no security. Or rather, there is, but not from anybody truly determined to get at you. And that will be more and more true as quantum computing becomes more prevalent and it just becomes easier to break any encryption.
And it seems that most people don't care about security. I don't have anything to hide. There's people have gone on late night talk shows. We'll go down the streets. For a candy bar, will you give me your bank password?
Yeah.
And they do.
And they do. My first question would be, are you going to test it?
Yeah.
Because if you are, I won't give it to you. Pardon? If you're not, I'll just give any four numbers and you can give me a candy bar.
Yeah.
I have seen people telling stories on talk shows and say, "Oh, yeah, I was talking to blah, 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 and she just moved into an apartment at 327 State Street, blah, 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 blah." Don't tell people somebody's address. Don't do that. It's ridiculous. I just don't get it. We need to be more careful, and we need to be more aware. Now, if your address is public, for example, your email addresses are public, and that's absolutely understandable. They have to be. If you don't mind people calling you, like your business phone, you will always give out your business phone number, but don't give out your private phone number. It used to be they were in the phone book. Now who the heck's got a phone book? And I get notices from Google all the time. "We found your public information. Do you want to delete it?" Yes, please. So
for free? Because I know there's a lot of pay services that do that.
Yeah. And Google does it for free.
What's the name of that program?
It's part of Google's setup. I just told it go find my stuff. I don't remember exactly, but I'll look it up later. I got to answer the phone right now because we're talking to Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
A couple questions. Actually, the more the show goes on, the more questions that you bring about in my head.
Yeah, you're dangerous, Fred.
I use Brave browser on my Linux desktop, and I searched for a product. And on my phone, Android phone, I was looking at Facebook, and an ad for that same company came up on my feed in Facebook. Coincidence, or I don't have a setting set right?
Facebook has a cookie that or a tracking pixel on pretty much every website.
Yeah. So what if you search for something on Facebook? Facebook remembers that, and when you go
back up, I searched for it on Brave browser.
Yeah, okay.
And I looked at the product line,
and that website
then
set a cookie.
I'm looking at Facebook on my phone, Android phone, and that same company showed up.
Right. So what happened Steve said.
I wonder if that's just a coincidence.
No, what Steve said is true. Facebook sets a universal cookie on your computer.
Every device.
Any device that you go to Facebook on. And what
right.
that universal okay. cookie does is it will remember and send back to Facebook searches. Also,
because
it depends on where you searched. So if you searched on Google, Facebook pays them to say where did Fred search.
And pretty much every website has a Facebook tracking pixel on it.
Standard Brave browser use as a search.
Sorry, say that again?
I never changed it.
Sorry, say that again?
So I have Brave on my Linux desktop, and I use the, I don't think I ever set what the search was. It's just a standard search. I know it's different than Google, but I don't know what it is.
If you just do a standard search, you can use Leo, I think is what it's called. No, Leo is their AI.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brave allows some Google and Facebook tracking pixels through their blockers.
Okay, so that's one that they allowed.
Yeah.
It wasn't a terrible thing, but it was just like, is this coincidence?
No, so you can.
Well, and also if you search for something popular, you know, like cars, you're going to get a car ad as a coincidence. But
right, one of the things that we find is that let's say you search for cars. This happened when I was searching for cars. The minute I started thinking about cars, I started seeing more car ads. Not because there were more, but because I was noticing them more.
It's a psychological phenomenon.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I understand that concept, but this was completely, I had never seen this particular company on Facebook ever before, and then I received a food item that was gifted to me, and I liked it so well, I said, I want to buy some more of that. And then I looked on my, using my Brave browser, searched for that item, and now ad for that company comes up on my Facebook.
It was gifted to you by someone you know, right? That person you know searched for that stuff, so the tracking pixels got assigned to them. Facebook knows you know them, and so you might have similar interest. I'll show you ads too. See, it's, people say, well, they're listening to me. No, it's much more insidious than that.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Also, if you're using Brave,
so
you
then
might.
Another question
I'm
I have,
sorry.
You talked about. Google
Wait,
methods.
Stop. Stop, Fred. Let me finish about Brave search first.
I potted them.
Brave has its own search engine at search.brave.com. And it is supposed to be private.
Search.brave.com. I installed Brave, but I don't think I ever, I can't remember that I ever did anything because it was so long ago.
Yeah. If you go to search.brave.com and then bookmark that, make that your search engine.
Okay.
I think there's this in
okay,
settings.
Great. So back to the Google messages.
Yeah,
on seeing them on your desktop, is there a way to connect my phone calls to my desktop? Still using my phone and my data plan and yada yada yada, but the same concept as the Google messages. Is there something like that for phone calls?
If you have a Google Voice number, yes.
No, it's just an Android, Samsung Galaxy phone with.
I don't know of one. I do know that if you use Google Voice, you can call from your computer.
Microsoft PhoneLink will connect Android and iPhone to Windows. It uses Bluetooth on your phone to send the
right.
call to your computer.
So this, I need that for a Linux machine.
Well, that just makes it even harder.
Oh, PC phone. Look at you. PC phone.
Okay.
I've never used it. Make and receive phone calls through your PC. Through Bluetooth. Connect your Android phone via Bluetooth and make or receive calls completely directly from your computer using your PC's microphone and speakers.
Is that one word? PC phone?
PC phone, yeah. Okay. Snapcraft.io/PC phone.
Presumably, Dave will put that on the...
That's a Linux program.
Okay.
And it's in my repository. I'm sure it's in yours as well.
Okay.
Now I've never used it. All right, Fred. We got to take a break.
Okay, take care. I'll talk to you another time.
All right, thanks. We got to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco. And with you, it is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. Don't go too far.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, or toll-free at 800-790-0415. Corey Solovowitz, sorry, Corey, receives more unwanted email than you, about 700 a day. That's because he's the owner of the domains noreply.us and noreply.net. He created them for his own use, but quickly noticed that other systems were sending mail to @noreply.us addresses. Companies may send emails to company name @noreply.net or similar variations, believing they are not going anywhere or could not be monitored in any way. Instead, Corey gets emails detailing people's Viagra orders, messages asking him to approve people's work vacations or leaves of absence, hotel bookings including people's full names, and invitations to Zoom meetings from a UK government agency. Mike Sheward, the head of security at EV charging company Zeal, spent about $15 to buy the domain deletedusr.com. He has seen thousands of unintended emails coming his way from at least 100 different organizations across multiple domains he now owns. So be careful who you add to an email list or who you reply to. Mozilla has updated the GPG key used to sign Firefox and Thunderbird releases after it was accidentally exposed on GitHub. However, Mozilla noted that the risk of a supply chain attack in which threat actors could distribute malicious installers signed with the exposed key is low because only a limited number of individuals had access to the GitHub repository. Low, but not zero. So update when you get the notice. Mine updated this morning, as a matter of fact. Well, today's when I did the update and they were there. Cisco warns of two high severity vulnerabilities affecting the secure endpoint connector that allow threat actors to crash the ClamAV scanning process in denial of service attacks. The security flaws were found in the zip archive parser of ClamAV, the open source and cross-platform antivirus engine used to scan files for malware. If your company uses Cisco Secure Endpoint Connector, look for updates. Anyone sharing their screen on a Zoom call could have been taken. I love this one. Anybody sharing their screen on a Zoom call could have been taken over by, could have taken over the computers of everyone watching, and anyone watching could have taken over the presenters. The flaw sat in the annotation tool, a feature that lets participants draw and type on a shared screen, and it asks nothing of the victim beyond being in the meeting. No click, no download, no prompt, and nothing on screen to show it had happened. So if you haven't updated Zoom in a while, please do so.
So you actually got remote control of the computer, not just drawing on their
You have
video.
The computer. You own it.
Wow.
Yes, exactly.
Why was that option even available?
More than 373 browser extensions.
No, read that again.
What?
Read that again.
More than 737 browser yep. extensions published on the Chrome Web Store impersonated well-known VPN and proxy services while routing users' traffic through SOX 5 proxies operated by a single provider. Some of the extensions impersonated, remember, these are impersonations, not the real thing. Dozens of established brands, including ProtonVPN, NordVPN, Surfshark, ExpressVPN, and Cloudflare's 1.1.1.1 public domain name system resolver. While Google removed more than 200 of the extensions related to the identified campaign, over 500 of them are still active in Google's web store. Remember, so be careful which VPNs you're using. Also, please remember, VPNs don't do what you think they do, but we do. Assuming you think we answer computer questions. So give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415. You know, that's the one thing that I'm honestly getting a tiny bit tired of. The constant people who will always say, oh, I'm using a VPN, so I'm safe. No, you're not. VPNs don't do what you think they do. That VPNs, pay attention, all a VPN does is encrypt your traffic from you to the VPN. That's all. That's all it does. Once it gets to the VPN, it is decrypted. The VPN company knows who you are and where you're going, and they can look at what you do. So the question is not, are you using a VPN? Are you using a VPN that you implicitly trust? My hope is the answer to that is no.
And why are you using it? One of the common uses for regular people. So the intended use is I'm on the road. I use a VPN to connect to my server at work.
Right.
So I can take notes and...
Right. We ran a VPN when I was at RIT.
Right.
And so if I logged in, it was as if I were sitting at my desk, which is exactly the correct use for a VPN.
What a common use now is, if you want to steal Doctor Who from the BBC, you open a VPN that says you're in England.
Right.
And then it thinks you're in England.
And it lets you download Doctor Who.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that the company that's running that VPN gets a note from the government that says, give us your data, and they will.
Yep.
There was a guy who got arrested. He was using... Tor, he was using Tails, which is supposed to be a secure Linux operating system, Tor, which is supposed to be an anonymous network, and a VPN, and they still found him. Clearly, they don't do what you think they do.
But they're advertised and touted as keeping you safe on the internet. In fact, I'm getting a little annoyed at Malwarebytes.
Yeah.
Even if you pay for the Malwarebytes service, oh, you should get our VPN. Oh, you should get our WebGuard. Yeah. Oh, you should get this. Oh, you should get that.
It's all about earning more money for the shareholders. And
that's the
only way
baby.
They can do it is add more products on and telling their shareholders, well, we'll just offer them this and say, you know, they got to do that to increase the profits.
Right. It's all about the upsell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you run your own VPN service, like, for example, if you get a Linode, or if you prefer Linode, I don't care. If you get a Linode instance up on linode.com and run your own VPN service, then you're as secure as you're going to get. They're still going to know it came from your Linode, but if you don't save any logs, nobody can trace it from your server. And you can say, well, there's 50 people who know that address, so it wasn't me.
Yeah. And the other thing a VPN does is hide where you go on the internet from your ISP.
Right. And
so
that's
your
all
your ISP can't sell that data.
Right.
But your ISP knows you went to VPN company, so then the police go to the VPN company to get your data.
Right.
So if you are caught trying to do something bad.
Right. It essentially takes one extra phone call for them to get you. That's, yeah. I don't know that that's worth it. The other problem is, of course, most VPNs are very slow.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're paying for the highest tier service. And so you can get on a VPN, but now you're doing dial-up all over again. Speaking of network speeds, we should probably talk about SpeedNet. People are constantly saying to me, you know, you've got, I go to SpeedNet and it gives me different answers all the time. Well, yes, it is always going to give you different answers depending on what time of day you go, how many other people are on your network, how many other people are on that server.
And how you're routed to it.
And how you're routed to it. And one of the interesting things that you will find is that some ISPs will throttle you if you're on a service like Netflix. They will slow you down on Netflix.
Because they want Netflix to pay them.
They want Netflix to pay them, and Netflix is a huge user of their service. So there is a instead of speednet.com, you can go to fast.com, F-A-S-T.com.
Which is Netflix.
That is a Netflix server, and it will tell you how fast your speed is at Netflix. And if it is significantly different from speed test, then you know that you're being throttled on Netflix.
I'm getting a lower speed on fast.com than I did at speedtest.net.
And that's because you're being throttled.
By the school is throttling Netflix.
That's exactly right. And that is exactly correct.
Yep.
Now, Netflix only shows you your download speed. And frankly, that's what most people are only interested in. You know, they're going to YouTube. They're going to Netflix. They're going to Amazon Prime. They're, you know, those are the places they're going.
There's a more button that showed my upload speed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But if you just look at it, it's only your download speed. And there's a command line version for Linux that shows you your download speed. So there you can test your download speeds at speedtest.net, and that'll give you your download speed to their server. And you can pick multiple servers off of their site as well.
And a lot of the ISPs have their own instance running.
Yes.
Which gives you a better test between you and the ISP. The problem is it doesn't matter how fast it is between you and the ISP. The ISP right. to the other end can be a lot slower.
That's exactly right. So if I go to my ISP, which is Greenlight, I get essentially regularly 10 to 20% more than I'm paying for. God bless them. It's great. If I go to, for example, Microsoft or Google or Apple, it slows down significantly. That has nothing to do with Greenlight and everything to do with the fact that Google's and Microsoft's and Apple servers are slower or busier. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, depending on where you go and when you go and what you're doing, your data can come significantly slower from one site than another and has nothing to do with your ISP.
I set up a customer this week with new fiber service.
Yeah.
From the two merged companies.
Oh, yeah, okay.
2.62 gigabit symmetrical.
Wow.
And his router only does 500.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. At that point, you need a better router. There's yep. no yeah. question of that.
Well, so it's the Frontier Fiber powered by Verizon.
Right.
Verizon recently bought Frontier. And they're using an Eero 7 Max, which is theoretically capable of 2 gigabit.
Right.
But he was only getting 500.
Well,
because the computer only has Wi-Fi 6 in it.
Oh, he's on Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Well, you're never going to get better than 480 or 490 or whatever the number is. If he'd have to be directly connected to get the speed. Here's the other thing, people. Figure out what your computer is capable of doing and don't pay for more.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, if you're always on Wi-Fi and you don't have a direct Ethernet cable connection, the best speed you're going to get is about 500 megabits per second. Why are you paying for 2 gig if you can only ever do 500? 480, 490, whatever that number ends up being. And that's part of why, you know, you're getting the speed you're getting too.
Yeah. I'm only getting a 170 connection to the AC router. I have an older computer. It's only got Wi-Fi 5 in it. Is AC? I forget.
So
I used to know all the 802.11 numbers.
Now that when there were only three of them or five of them.
Then they went to AX, and I think we're now on BX or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Now they're all the way.
Well, and a lot of it too is they were an older couple, and they watch some streaming television. You don't need that fast anyway,
right?
If we always say, you know, family of five with each of the kids streaming a different show, then being that fast would be good. Or you're downloading a new Linux distro every day. Then you want that fast. Yeah.
I only have 500 meg, but I'm all alone in the house now, so it all works out for me. But the thing is, you want to match what you're capable of with what you're paying for. There truly is, if you're only ever on Wi-Fi, you really don't need much more than 500 megabits because you're not going to get more than 500 megabits. Unless you have a super new computer. I don't know what the fastest new speed is.
I think I was just starting to look. 7 or 7E is the latest.
Yeah.
And it's got to be on your router and on your device, your computer, your phone, whatever.
Right.
So Wi-Fi 7 is 802.11BE.
So your green light, you're only using 500, not a gig anymore?
Or? No, I mean, I'm down to 500. I get 530, 528, 535 regularly. But yeah, I'm down to that. I don't need to spend for more.
Yeah, no.
So even Wi-Fi 6 is supposed to do 9 gigabits over Wi-Fi.
Wow.
No.
Well,
it never does.
It never does.
Yeah, Wi-Fi 7 is 40 gigabit.
Right. It never does, and you have to have everything capable of doing that.
And no obstructions. And right. you're
close.
You're an inch from the router.
Yeah, right.
Or you got giant antennas, you know, cranking up the power. So, yeah. So you can do 120 millimeter. Or 60 millimeter. What radio frequencies do you usually look at? You're in the meter bands, right?
Yeah. I go from 160 meters down to 70 centimeters. But normally, the HF band is from 160 meters down to 10 meters, technically.
Yep.
The 6 meter, the 70 centimeters, and 2 meter bands, and they're going even lower.
Yeah. Well, that's so 2.4 gigahertz is 120 millimeter wavelength, which is about 4¾ inches. So this is an experiment you can try at home. Put some shredded cheese on a plate and put it in the microwave, but disable the spinny thing.
Yeah.
So the plate doesn't spin. You'll see every 5 inches, melted, not melted, melted, not melted, because that's the frequency and the wavelength of 2.4
which
gigahertz.
Which is why it spins.
Yep.
So that it goes through the dead spots and the working spots.
Yep.
All the time. And on top of that is how fast is your computer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if I can, so for example, on my desktop, which has gigabit connection to my gigabit router, to my gigabit switch, to my gigabit router, I get the full 530 megabits.
So even if you had the 2 gigabit line,
I couldn't use it.
You got a gigabit max anyway.
That's exactly right.
Even if you're wired.
So why would I pay for that?
Yeah.
I can get my 560 with no problem, and it will, a 530 with no problem, and it will, and my computer, which is an i9 processor, is fast enough to do whatever I want to do at that speed. But on my little $70 Fujitsu stylistic tablet, which is a super slow processor running Windows 11, believe it or not, it can barely load a web page. And that has nothing to do with the speed of the router or my cable connection, my fiber connection. It has everything to do with the speed of the computer I'm on. So in order to get the maximum speed possible out of your setup, you need everything to match up and down the line. And if it doesn't, then you're either wasting money somewhere or wasting time somewhere. So like I said, you know, right now, except for my one wired connection, all of my devices are wireless. So 480 megabits is fast as most of them will do because they're all older machines. So yep. 500 megabits is fine for me.
Yeah.
And it again, because I'm the only one in the house, it does everything it needs to do. Even when people are over, which is it's still two or three people still is not a problem.
And we're running this entire radio station and dozens of connections here on only a 100 megabit line.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you can do all of that.
Yeah.
But the point is not can you do it. The point is what are you paying for and what are you actually getting for that money. So, you know, paying for a 2 gigabit line is great if you match it all the way across the board. But if you're all Wi-Fi, you don't need more than a 500 megabit connection because you generally won't be able to use it. That's all I'm saying. And, you know, for most homes, 100 megabit will handle normal video and streaming,
mm-hmm.
Video streaming and video calls for you know, a couple of three people.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't, you know, there was a time when I had gigabit Ethernet and my daughter was living at home and we had a friend of hers living there as well. You know, they were talking to two or three or five or 10 people at once and doing, watching different things and playing games simultaneously. My wife was watching one streaming service downstairs while she was on her computer. I was watching a different streaming service upstairs while I was on my computer and I was downloading another Linux distro because that's what I do. And, you know, I needed Ethernet for all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, most people don't. And so, you know, having something in the 500 megabit range is probably more than enough for most people. Why not say in this economy? Why not save the money?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got the 750.
It's bragging rights.
Yeah, it's bragging rights. People look at me and say, wow, you only have 500 megabits? You're a tech guru. Yeah, but I don't. I will buy a laptop at the drop of a hat, but I don't need more than 500 megabits of download.
Remember when 10 was fast? We were all on 56K modems, and we were
I was just about
shocked about how fast 10 megabit was.
Well, I can remember Frontier. They were a lot slower than that.
Yeah.
I got angry when I bought a 2400 baud modem and the text scrolled up the screen so fast I couldn't read it. Because it was all text in those days. Yeah. I started a 300 baud modem. You want to know what somebody's really like? Give them a modem. Give them dial up. And let them watch them on the internet.
They should add that to the browser, that when you open a browser and type an address for the first time, it makes the modem screeching sound.
My phone's dial tone is the modem sound.
Nice.
All right. Well, that's it. We are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Good questions again this week. I really did like them. We will be tomorrow night at 9 p.m. We will be in the Soundbites Lounge. So head on over to soundbites.org and click on the link and join us there. It's a video call, but you do not have to turn on your mic and or your camera. So you can join in anonymously. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Hug your loved ones and be good to one another, will you?